Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio show, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. Right now, I am flying solo, so if you'd like to get in with a call, you will get on the air right away, or very quickly to right away. Gordon Glantz is on assignment this week, and Gordon will certainly be back next week to talk about the NFL draft, one of, if not his favorite topic, and he'll analyze the draft for us, but he is not here this week. And right now, it's just me and you. So please give me a call, 1-805-727-7014, 805-727-7014. And we can talk lots of sports. There's lots to talk about this week. No shortage of topics. Let's start actually with the Flyers. Flyers down 2-0 to Washington Capitals. Not a good thing. Not a good thing they're down 2-0. But down 2-0 is not an awful thing in terms of the – they haven't lost at home yet. It's, you know, series really turns when you lose at home. Flyers gave a much better effort in Game 2 after only getting 19 shots on goal in Game 1. They come back with 42 in Game 2. Braden Holtby stops all but one shot, though. And we do have someone here. Josh, is that you? No, we do have a caller, though. Caller, you have a question? Phone number ends in 4448. Do you have a question? Okay, if you're just listening live, that's okay, too. That caller has dropped, so give a call back. Whether that's Josh or with another caller, please give a call back, and I will put you back on the air, and we'll get your question. As I was saying, Flyers, much better effort in Game 2. Game 1, they only get four shots on goal in the second period, four shots in the third period. That's just not going to do it, and they lose that game 2-0. Come back, though, in Game 2 with a 42-shot effort. They get 19 shots in the first period. That matches their total for the entire first game. Unfortunately, they didn't score in there. And it took until the second period, about midway through, when Jake Voracek scores a 4-on-4 situation. Braden Schenn and Voracek pressuring Brooks Orpik, who has the puck down in his skates, so can't look down, doesn't see it. And Voracek takes and goes around. Cuts the lead to 2-1 in there. Was a really awful goal by Steve Mason. Actually, which made the score 2-0 in favor of the Capitals. And we can talk a little bit about that. I think the Flyers' response to that was pretty good. Claude Giroux, Wayne Simmonds, all talked about how Steve Mason's been a major part of them getting to where they are and how important he's been. And that, you know, they're not going to put the blame on him. They're not going to put the responsibility on him. And truthfully, that goal did not lose them the game. It didn't help, that's for sure. But, you know, the Flyers bounced back and played pretty well. They didn't hang their head and you know, give up. And Mason certainly responded by playing pretty well, made some more really good saves. You know, gave up two more goals, one of them on a power play goal by Ovechkin. That, you know, nobody was going to stop that shot. It was perfectly set up and one-timed it right from his little office spot there inside the left circle. Really hard to stop that if Ovechkin hits it in the right spot and gets there so quickly. But other than that, Mason played really, really well. In fact, right before the bad goal, he made an unbelievable full-split save with both, you know, spreading all the way across with both pads. You know, the guy gave a bad goal, an awful goal. He said it. He said it was a bad goal. It's my fault. I can't let this happen going forward. But I think they moved past it within that game. Is it going to affect them in the next game? I don't think so. Not unless you lay out another bad goal. Then, of course, you know, it compounds the mistake, and you start wondering, well, you know, when's the next one? I hate to say it, that was sort of the Ron Hextall. I love Ron Hextall. He was a terrific goalie. But, you know, every once in a while, he'd let in that bad goal. And when it happened during the playoffs, sometimes it really hurt the team. And, you know, sometimes they were, you know, when is it going to happen? Because it just seemed inevitable it would happen. And when it did, there was kind of a deflating effect. I didn't see that yesterday, though, with Steve Mason goal. But, like I said, if he lets in another one, then that could have that impact. But Flyers down 2-0, like I said. If they play as well as they did in Game 2, though, I think they will be fine. Hey, if the Capitals beat them anyway and they play as well as they did last night, more credit to the Capitals, and that's that. I do. I believe we have Josh Lamberg on the line. Josh, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. There you go, Josh. So, Josh, I was just talking about the Flyers, and they're down 2-0, but how much better they played yesterday. But we do see the important. Well, first of all, I should ask you your reaction to the Steve Mason goal that made it 2-0 for the Capitals, which is what I was just talking about.
The Flyers, as you said, played much better in game two and unfortunately lost again, but it's a good Capitals team, and I think that we're going to see the Flyers more competitive in the third game as well, and hopefully they can have a chance to make the series 2-1 and make it competitive.
Tosh, the one big factor in this series has been, it's only two games old, but has been the power play, and the Flyers made a change yesterday, and they moved Braden Schenn over to the right side on the wing there, and left-handed shot over there, and it did create many more chances. The first game they didn't have that many chances. Game two they had a lot of chances. They didn't get them in because of Braden Holtby in large part, but it still doesn't change that they are 0-for on the power play, and the Capitals were 2-for-2 yesterday. And I guess my question, more on the second half of that question, is how much of an impact does the loss of Sean Couturier, their best defensive player, best defensive forward certainly, how much of an effect do you think that has had on the series and will have on the rest of it?
Well, I think it's a big factor. Couturier's had a good season for them, and he's probably played better this season than people thought he would, and his injury is a big factor, and they're going to miss him for sure in this series, and I think that he would have contributed and helped out on the power play as well. They've struggled on the power play, as you mentioned, and they're going to have other guys step up on defense and have other guys step up overall in terms of being able to play both sides, offense and defense, and they're going to miss Couturier for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what he does normally, even if it's just winning faceoffs. He's a big body there at center, so even when they're on 5-on-5, he's a huge help. Like you pointed out, Josh, he had a better season maybe offensively than some people thought he would. He was hurt for a long stretch, two stretches actually, and still had more goals than the Sixers had wins, which was my bet with Gordon Glance, and that is now official. That Sean Couturier goals exceeding the Sixers wins, which we'll talk about the Sixers in a little while. But it's certainly his loss, and you can't cry in the playoffs. You know you're going to have people hurt, but he gets knocked out in game two of the first game by Ovechkin, who shows that he can contribute in a lot of ways. I mean, if for people who aren't familiar with him, he's not just a goal scorer. Man, that guy throws a lot of checks and had hard hits, and this one knocked Couturier out of the series, as it turns out. The Flyers expect him to be out 2 weeks. Hurts them on the penalty kill, hurts them defensively as a whole. And, Josh, you pointed out as well, he's on that second power play unit, and he does a pretty good job there, and has picked up a lot of points through that second power play unit the last part of the season, and it's really been tough without him. We didn't get into this last week, or maybe we did a little bit. We had so many. First of all, Josh, before I forget, and I was going to say this at the top of the show, huge thanks to you and Gordon last week with all the technical problems we had, and I apologize to the listeners. I was doing a show from Florida, had bad reception in my hotel room. At times, it turns out my phone also had a problem. My cell phone had a problem. So there was a little compounded, and you guys did a great job carrying the show. So thank you for that before I forget. I did say it at the end of the show, but you were already off the air. I wanted to say it to you while you're here. So thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's just go into Monday is going to be an emotional night for the Flyers, and they're going to try to come back. They're going to have, I'm sure, something for Ed Snyder, who we'll talk about in just a minute here. But, Josh, I mean, can they do anything? They want to win. But can they do anything differently than they've done? Or could they just have to keep going with it and hope it's good enough to win?
You mean, can they change anything up?
Yeah.
I don't know if they can do it. I think certainly the series shifting back to Philadelphia will help them out, being able to play at home in front of their fans. It will give them a boost, and that'll hopefully give them some energy and get them. The fans will be excited. The Flyers have some of the best fans. We know Philadelphia fans in general are great, but the Flyers fans are really great. They sell out pretty much every game during the season, and it will probably be a sellout crowd there for the playoffs. So I think that the fans will give the Flyers a little bit of a boost, and it's hard to play on the road in the playoffs, so the Capitals will be facing that. So I think they get a win in Game 3. You mentioned the Steve Mason goal, you know, very uncharacteristic for him to allow a goal beyond the red line, but I think that won't happen again, and he's really been a great goaltender all season long, and I think that he's going to step up and stop the Capitals from scoring some goals against them that he shouldn't allow. And I don't think that the Capitals goalie is going to be able to continue what he's been able to do so far. He's played really well. You mentioned how the Flyers played really well in Game 2, and they still lost. He made 41, Braden Holtby made 41 saves, 19 of them during the first period, and the Flyers lost 4-1, so with the Capitals taking a 2-0 lead. So I think that he won't be able to continue that great play. Goaltenders do get hot in the playoffs sometimes, but I think that the Flyers will get some goals. You get that many shots on goal. 41 shots is a lot of shots to get on goal. Usually the average, Eric, you could correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe the average probably is around 30, 35 shots maybe during the regular season. So 41 is above average, and the Flyers got off a lot of shots on goal, and those shots are eventually going to find the net and get through to the other side. So I think that the Flyers have a good shot to win Game 3, and they just got to keep doing what they're doing, keep putting pressure on the goalie, and hopefully they'll get some goals to get across the line there.
Yeah, one thing, you're right, Josh, one thing it does have to improve, I will say, they got to keep doing what they're doing, except their penalty kill has to be better. They can't, especially if they're not scoring on the power play. And like I said, we had a lot more chances last game in Game 2, but it'd be nice to get one past Holtby there. He's having a great year. He's probably should win the Vezina Trophy. Like I said, if they can't get one past him, at least they can't be giving them up at the other end. And Couturier's not there. But you can't keep using that as an excuse. He's not there. You got to step up. Other people have to step up and improve the shorthanded. They cannot lose the special teams battle and hope to beat Washington. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you have a question, say your name and ask a question, please, or a comment. Okay, or you could just be listening live. That's just fine. Josh, let's move on. The day after our show, and we have a couple of articles up on PhillyFanatics.com about this, including my column, Ed Snyder died age 83 after a battle with bladder cancer. Josh, can you talk about, this guy was here for 50 years as he, in various positions, but basically founded the Flyers, the Spectrum he was involved with, owning the Spectrum, Comcast Spectacor, he helped put that deal together. He was the chairman. What's Ed Snyder's lasting legacy in Philadelphia?
I think he's one of the best owners in all of sports. He did a great job with the Flyers. He won two cups with them in the 70s, and of course, you could look at the negative side that they haven't won one in 40 years, 40 plus years. But they've always been competitive. They've been a team that's been in the playoffs more years than they haven't been. They've been a team, since I've watched them growing up in the 80s and 90s. They've been a team that's they were in the Cup with Ron Hextall in the late 80s, and then they're in the Cup Finals in 97, and then again in 2010. So they were in the Cup Finals three different times. Unfortunately, they weren't able to win in any of those times, but they made it to the Cup Finals, which a lot of teams don't get a chance to do. And they won two championships under Ed Snyder, and he worked his way up through the ranks, and I think that his legacy will be one of the best owners in all sports, Eric. I think he really has, kept this Flyers team competitive for a long time, although, as I said, they haven't won a cup in 40-plus years. They did win two cups while he was there, and they were in a bunch of other cup finals when he was there as well. And I think that, obviously very sad that he passed away, and he's, not just one of the best owners in Philadelphia sports, one of the best owners overall in all sports.
Yeah, Josh, I think you're right. He introduced really hockey to Philadelphia. He had been here before. There had been a team before, going back a ways. But in terms of making it really part of the fabric of the city, I think, and the whole Delaware Valley, I think Ed Snyder's responsible for that. I think he's responsible because of the people he hired and let them do their jobs. But he was the passion. He really reflected the Philadelphia fan. He was so passionate. If you ever saw him sitting in his box, more so at the Spectrum than at the Wells Fargo Center, because he was more in with the people there. And that was actually one thing. I talked to him early, maybe year 2000, 2001. We've had a one-on-one sit-down with Mr. Snyder, as everybody calls him, although I did call him that. I didn't call him Mr. Snyder. And he didn't like Mr. Snyder while we're at it, but he didn't like being called that. But it is a term of respect, and he certainly deserved the respect. But he talked about how he liked the Spectrum better in the sense that he was more more intimate with the fans. You could walk by, he'd high-five people coming out after the game from his box, and if you ever saw him staring at an official or making a choke sign or pumping his fist, you knew how much he cared. But, Josh, I'm going to say his influence goes beyond hockey. And if you look at the things he helped create, WIP Radio as an all-sports station, Comcast Sportsnet, I mean, really, the guy changed the way we watch and talk about sports. I mean, isn't that also part of his legacy here?
Oh, it definitely is. You know, not just as an owner of the Flyers, but he was he stepped down. I believe he was the owner of the Sixers for many years as well. He stepped down from that role, or he was the president, or he was, you know, he was definitely involved with the Sixers as well. So he was not just only the owner of the Flyers. He, as you said, he created Comcast Sportsnet, and he really WIP. He was involved with that, and he really created a whole sports environment here in Philadelphia that has just grown over time and has made this city a great sports city and one of the best sports cities in all of the country. It has four teams, which not a lot of cities have all four teams in one, you know, all four sports in one city. So you have that, and he's just he's been a role model for any other owners that have come in here in other sports, and he's mentored lots of guys. He mentored Pat Croce when he was here with the Sixers, and of course the Sixers had that run to the finals in 2001. And he's just done a great job overall. I think you make a great point. He's not just will be remembered as the owner of the Flyers, but for being involved in many different facets of sports and the city overall.
Yeah, and with the Sixers, he was you're right, Josh. Once they did the Comcast Spectacor merger, which and they purchased the Sixers, he was officially the, I believe, chairman of the 76ers as well. Although there's no question the Flyers were his baby, but the Sixers were, you know. You know, I'll say he adopted the Sixers temporarily, but you're right about that. You know, really, the impact, amazing. WIP, I should mention, he at one point, I believe, referred to that he felt like Dr. Frankenstein. It, you know, he created a monster, and he didn't really want it to be what it became. But, you know, hey, you make the good with the bad. I do want to also take it even beyond sports itself or beyond professional sports. When the city was going to close all the ice rinks because they didn't have any money to run them, it was Ed Snyder who got the money together to keep the ice rinks running in the city. And, of course, as he said, his legacy in beyond the Flyers will be the Ed Snyder Youth Hockey Foundation, which uses hockey to achieve a much greater purpose, which is to help inner-city students. And you think about that and what that program's done. Maybe it's going to create some hockey players, but really what it does is help kids stay in school, help them with goals, help them with priorities, help them with schoolwork and academics and the importance there and discipline. And that probably goes beyond anything. I mean, that's why he was so proud of that as part of his legacy, is that goes beyond, you know, I mean, okay, if it creates some hockey players and hockey interest, that's great, but it creates a goal far greater than that and a far greater impact than that. And I think that's why he was so proud of that program and the work it's done and will continue to do. So farewell, Ed Snyder, and he will be missed. And, Josh, you pointed out maybe the best owner, certainly in Philadelphia that I can remember, and maybe take it wide, sports-wide. And then, of course, on the national level and North American level, tremendously influenced in the NHL and you know, in terms of rules, in terms of expansion, in terms of all sorts of TV revenue, all sorts of stuff Ed Snyder was involved in. So his loss definitely will be felt. Let's move on, Josh, to the 76ers, and their season ended. They were 10-72, as you can see on the top 10. I'm sorry, I'm going to just check with the caller again. Caller, do you have a question? Comment? Okay. 76. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, I just want to say Ed Snyder is also known for being philanthropic throughout the entire Philadelphia community, not just in sports.
Absolutely correct. And have you ever been to the Flyers Carnival?
I've never been, but I always see them, you know, talk about it on the news.
Yeah, it's really the model. And Josh talked about mentoring. He mentored people. But for other organizations, the Flyers Carnival, Fight for Lives Carnival, Wives Fight for Lives Carnival, is the model for other sports organizations who try to do similar things. That's the one they come and watch and learn how they do it here in Philadelphia with the Flyers and use that as the model for their things. And you're right. And also I'll point out, he gave a lot of money away that his name's not attached to, that he didn't do it publicly. And there have been some stories about that since his death. causes and organizations that he gave a lot of money to and helped with. You're right. So I'm really glad you brought that up. Thank you very much. Philanthropy, a big part of his existence. Josh, a team that does need some charity is the Philadelphia 76ers. 10-72, as our top 10 list on PhillyConnect.com, it's the second worst record in team history and also in NBA history for a full season. Sam Hinkie out there, Brian Colangelo in. Josh, what can they do? Can they build from what Sam Hinkie did, or do they have to clean up the mess first and then move forward? In other words, they have three centers. You know, do they have to restart over in some ways, or can they just build right from where they are?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I mean, they're getting reinforcements. They have, they're going to have, hopefully, they only have a 25% chance, so the odds are against them, but they, hopefully will win the lottery and get the number one overall pick and maybe draft Ben Simmons. And, he's a guy, it's hard to say how good he's going to be in the NBA because he wasn't even able to make LSU into a tournament team. So obviously they didn't have a lot of talent on that team, but he was certainly the best player on the team and one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country. But it's hard to say if he is going to be the number one overall pick. He was thought originally to be the number one overall pick, but he didn't maybe at times have such a great season, and there are other guys out there who could possibly be picked before him. So we'll see what happens with that. But the Sixers will hopefully get the number one overall pick, or at least a pick in the top three, and get a really good player in here. And then they get a couple guys back. They get Saric from overseas, and they get Joel Embiid back from injury. And the question is, will Joel Embiid be another Greg Oden? Will he be a guy who has a lot of talent and is a really good center, but is never able to showcase it on the court because of injuries, and just has injuries his whole career and never able to showcase it? So we'll see what happens with that. He's had back-to-back years where he hasn't been able to play. But if he is able to play, and who knows, he might be even better than Okafor and Nerlens Noel. So maybe they get Joel Embiid back and he ends up being healthy, best case scenario, and then they have kind of an embarrassment of riches. They have three centers, or two centers and a power forward, if you consider Noel a power forward, three big men, and hopefully they can trade one or even two of them away and get something back in return, whether it's a high draft pick, or it's a guard or a small forward or something like that they need. They have pieces that they can put together, hopefully a better team. And I think that they're going to be improved next year. I think that they still have a long way to go. I like the Phillies' chances more in terms of the future. I think the Phillies are going to not compete this year, but they're going to – we could talk about that. They had a really exciting win today, by the way, a walk-off win by Freddie Galvis. But – I think the Phillies are going to be a team that competes maybe for like second or third place next year, and then the following year in 2018 they'll be potential to win the division again. So I think the Phillies are closer than the Sixers. The Sixers still have to put a bunch of things together, and maybe it's a few years out, but I think that it's a situation where they do have some young talent on this team, but I think they got to get some veterans in here, maybe sign some free agents, and try to build this team, because they just got so many young players on this team right now. It's hard to see them compete next year or even the year after that. So we'll see what happens. But I think certainly getting Saric and Embiid back for next year, playing for this team, I think could help them out. And we'll see how it works out. Saric, Embiid, Noel, and Okafor. You got four big men. It's kind of clogging. That will clog the lane, and not enough playing time for all of them. So probably at least one, if not two of them, have to go and have to be traded. And hopefully, you could get some good value back in return.
Yeah, that's really the question there. And Josh, like you and Gordon were much more optimistic than I was about the Sixers last week. But here's Sam Hinkie comes out and. He just kept pushing off the future. And I think, on the one hand, I think ownership kind of bailed on him. On the other hand, I was never on board in the first place. And he just keeps pushing the future off. And they had three of the worst records in franchise history, and it's going the wrong way. They keep winning fewer games each year than they won the year before. And I don't think it ever was going to work. They're shifting courses now. Brian Colangelo wants to win as soon as they can, and unless improves as they can, it will be interesting to see if they can do that, though. And Josh, you brought it up. Can they bring free agents, veteran free agents in here that'll want to come here? And I think that's there's still a question mark there. You mentioned the Phillies, but let's shift to them then. Phillies had a pretty good week beating the Padres three times. Of course, the Philly Fanatics All-Star team might give the Padres a pretty good game while we're at it. They certainly wouldn't score many more than like two or three runs off us. They've been shut out five times, I believe. But Phillies then get crushed by the Nationals back-to-back. But Josh, you pointed out they win today, and I think you missed the biggest part of it, Josh, of the comeback, and that was who did the winning runs come against?
Jonathan Papelbon.
There you go, which adds a little icing to the cake. So let's just say, what has impressed you about the Phillies so far this year?
I think they're young pitching. I think that their pitching is ahead of schedule. They got a steal in Velasquez in the Giles trade. He was involved in that deal. Eichhoff is a good move as well. And Aaron Nola, draft pick, he's struggled a little bit here and there, but I think their young pitching has impressed me. They got a couple saves from one of their young pitchers as well, and I think that so far, I like their young players. Mikel Franco is off to a pretty good start. He's a guy I think could be a consistent 25-30 homer a guy a year for you, and even Ryan Howard, who's a veteran, has hit a couple homers early on in the season, so that's encouraging, and he's kind of embracing. He wasn't too happy about being a platoon guy at first, being a veteran and being an all-star and having such a such a great five-year period, a historic five-year period in the past. But he's kind of embraced that platoon role now, and he's not off to a pretty decent start. But overall, I think their young pitching has impressed me. That they were they had a couple bad games against the Nationals, but they pitched well against the Padres, and they were able to put up some really good numbers. I mentioned Velasquez. He had a historic game, became only one of seven pitchers to have 16 strikeouts or more, three hits or less, and zero walks and a shutout. So that was really impressive victory for him and for the team. And so I think overall the young pitching has impressed me. I think they're a little bit ahead of schedule. I think we thought they would be better next year. But that's impressed me, and some young players. And I think things are hopeful for this team. They have some young players in their farm as well. They were involved in the Cole Hamels trade and other guys in the Giles trade that could be starters for this team. So their starting rotation, I guess, overall has impressed me. Jeremy Hellickson, another guy who's not really a young guy or a veteran. He's kind of somewhere in between. But he was Rookie of the Year with the Tampa Bay Rays, and then he kind of fell off. He went to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Phillies got him for cheap. And he's off to a good start for them, so he's maybe having a resurgence to his career, and whether he stays with his team or he's involved in a trade deadline that gets you more pieces back, I think that's a good sign as well.
Yeah, both he and Nola did get hammered by the Nationals, but I don't think they're going to be the only ones to get hammered by the Nationals, but you're right. And Charlie Morton also has had two good starts after having a really bad first start. And the key to him, of course, is the Phillies hope to parlay him into a trade. So that would be good if he keeps pitching well, which he did again today. So some bright spots for the Phillies. And, Josh, interesting, something maybe we'll keep track of, interesting thought, which team's going to get back there first, get back to contention first, the Phillies or the Sixers. That's a really good point by you. We're going to do final thoughts on the other side. I've got a little less than a minute left. Let me just caller, do you have any last comments before we wrap up?
Okay. No.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your comment about Ed Snyder's philanthropy. That was a really good point and one we had missed, so I'm glad you brought that up. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. I should mention next week will be an Eagles draft show. Gordon Glantz will be back with us. We'll be talking Eagles draft, and we should have an Eagles draft story up before that show, and probably a first-round mock draft might be up before next Sunday's show. So we'll be talking about that. We'll be hopefully still be talking about the Flyers-Capital Series, or we'll be doing a season wrap-up on the Flyers. But that'll be next week's show. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, our continued Flyers coverage, game stories, every playoff game, columns, stories, You're going to have all sorts of stuff in the Sixers notebook coming up. They're sort of their year wrap-up. And, of course, the draft stuff. So thank you, those who are listening live. And we're going to do final thoughts right here on the other side as we move into archives. Josh, go ahead. Your final thought.
Well, Eric, being a California native now and living in L.A., I got to talk about a great sports night on Wednesday night. The Golden State Warriors set the record. They win their 73rd game to go 73-9. The Lakers have Kobe Bryant, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a second, just talk about all three, score 60 points, and they win that game. And then the Dodgers win as well. So great night for L.A. sports fans and California in general, if you count Golden State in that comment as well. But I want to talk about the Lakers and Kobe Bryant. You know, it was a season where they were just horrible. The Lakers fans, though, were really great. I went to two games myself this season, and it was a packed house. You wouldn't see that for the Sixers. The Sixers, who won just, you know, slightly less than the Lakers, seven or eight games less than the Lakers. I believe the Lakers won 17 or 18 games, and the Sixers won 10. So, you know, they were the two worst teams by far in the league, Lakers being the second worst, Sixers being the worst. But the Sixers struggled, I'm sure, to get fans to games, and the Lakers, being Kobe's last season, wanted to see him play. They sold out a lot of their games, and tickets were hard to come by. And just a great way to go out. He does shoot 50 shots, but I believe he went 22 out of 50, so close to 50%. He had some vintage moves, and I was watching the game and with a friend, and I was like, wait a second, he might go for 30. Oh, wait, he might go for 40. Hold on, he might go for 50. And never did I think in a million years he would go for 60 points in his final game, a meaningless game and a meaningless season for the Lakers. But not only did he go for 60 points, but he was integral at the end of the game, Eric, in helping the Lakers win the game. He had consecutive points for them down the stretch, and he helped them win that game. And Utah, it's not like they weren't trying. They were 40-41, so they were trying to get to 500 at 41-41. Of course, they missed the playoffs, but they wanted to get to 500, so they were trying hard to win that game. And Kobe Bryant just took over, hit some vintage fadeaway shots and some moves down low. And it was just very exciting to watch that game and see Kobe go out on a high note. And the funniest part about it was in the post-game comments, Kobe said, you know, it's funny, my whole career people have been telling me to pass the ball, and tonight they told me don't pass it, just shoot. So you know, people could say what they want about Kobe, he's a ball hog or whatever, but he won five championships, and I think he's the greatest player of his generation. You know, not necessarily the greatest player ever, but he's up there. He's I believe third on the all-time scoring list. Retires as third on the all-time scoring list, so in great company with Jordan and Wilt and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and guys like that. So he had a great career, 20 years, and a great way to go out with 60 points and a victory. And that's what I have to say for my final thought.
I agree, Josh. Thank you. And you know, we had so much stuff going on locally with the Flyers and Sam Hinkie resigning and the Phillies starting and unfortunately Ed Snyder dying, and you know, all that stuff made the news, but probably a little less than it would have at a less busy time. Kobe Bryant, of course, our listeners know he's from Lower Merion High School, and his father played for the Sixers, Joe Jellybean Bryant, and you know, he's from this area, and people I think have followed his career, and he got booed a lot in Philadelphia, but I think people certainly respect what a great player he is, Josh, and I think you made a good point. I mean, we can do an all-time list sometimes. I actually was doing that in my head this week, and I was trying to figure out where Kobe ranks, when I did it by position, so which I try to do, I try to keep it by position, he ends up on the second team only because the first team shooting guard is Michael Jordan. But I actually think Kobe is better than at least two of the players I had on the first team. I think people also forget, Josh, what a great defensive player he was. I think he was defensive player of the year at least once. And, you know, in the last couple of years, the injuries have taken their toll on him. But he was just a terrific defensive player and a clutch shooter. So, you know, some guys have a lot of great statistics, but, you know, the rest of their games, okay. Kobe was the full package there. He did everything. So thank you for bringing that up. My final thought is going to be on Ed Snyder, and I just can't, like I said, overstate the influence this man had on anyone who's a sports fan in Philadelphia. And actually, like I said, it goes way beyond that. If you're a fan of the National Hockey League, he influenced the game. If you're a fan of the Flyers, obviously – He wouldn't be here without him, or he wouldn't be a fan of the Flyers, and the Flyers wouldn't be here. And if there was a franchise here anyway, it wouldn't be the Flyers without Ed Snyder. It just wouldn't be. It would be a different franchise. People know when you talk about Flyers hockey, people know what you're talking about all across the country and Canada, obviously. They know what the Flyers stand for. He's established this as a place where players want to come. Players hate to be traded from. They hate to leave Philadelphia because they love the way they're treated by this organization. And in so many ways, this organization's a model for the way you run things. Yes, you're right. They haven't had a championship in 41 years. And obviously, that's a shortcoming. But they've been in the hunt. They've been in a lot of finals. Sometimes just by chance losing out to great teams. Two of those finals were against the Edmonton Oilers of the 80s with the Wayne Gretzky teams, filled with Hall of Famers. And the Flyers, the second one, took them to 7 games in 87, one of the great final series ever. You know, he just did so much. And then, like I said, he changed the way we watch sports. He changed the way we talk about sports in this city. He changed lives, people's lives, literally, through the philanthropy and the Flyers do and that he himself does. And, you know, that last little bit, that Ed Snyder Youth Hockey Foundation, what that does for inner-city kids. And I taught in the inner city for 7 years, so I'm very familiar with the needs of those kids and the fact that Ed Snyder chose to make that something he wanted to do and made that a priority. Just really an amazing late-life addition to his legacy, and may, along with the Flyers, be his lasting contribution. So thank you, Ed Snyder. Thank you for 50 years of great service here in the city. And every sports fan in Philadelphia is indebted to Ed Snyder for what he's done. So thank you. And that's it for this week's show. Josh Landsberg, great job. Thank you, Josh. And please check out PhillyFanatics.com, and please come back next Sunday where we will be doing our NFL draft preview. And I should mention there was a little news. I forget if I threw it in there. I don't think I did, that the Rams moved up to the number one pick, which could affect who the Eagles take at number eight, because the Rams are expected to take a quarterback. Josh, what's cool, from California, Goff, although I've seen somebody say Wentz also from North Dakota, but Goff seems to be the guy. Well, the problem with that is, Josh, you know this. Who picks right before the Eagles? Do you know this? At number seven?
I don't actually. No,
it is Chip Kelly and the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay.
So they could be taking that second quarterback, which then leaves the Eagles in a bit of a quandary, because there's probably not a third quarterback who belongs up there in the top 10. And then will they just take another position, and will they be denied what they hope to be their quarterback in the future by Chip Kelly and the 49ers? But we'll talk about that more next week. That's it for this week's show. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, just a quick last thought on that. I think with them re-signing Sam Bradford, they got him for a couple more years, and I think they're going to take an offensive lineman with that first pick. It's a good spot to take an offensive lineman, and I think this is a bad year for quarterbacks, actually. There aren't a lot of good quarterbacks, as you mentioned. There probably isn't a third quarterback in this draft, so I think they'll wait till next year or the year after to try to get the quarterback of the future.
Yeah, or they'll hope, you know, the other option they have, and we'll talk about this more next week with Gordon, is that, you know, if it gets to be like the third or fourth round, you know, they take a shot at a Christian Hackenberg or somebody like that, you know, and then hope they, you know, in 2 years they can, with Doug Peterson and Chase Daniel and all these guys, they can you know, fix some of the flaws. And who knows, maybe that guy turns into a quarterback in the future. It could be Hackenberg, it could be somebody else, but, you know, that's the hope. Yeah, there's nobody else they should be thinking about taking at eight, I can't imagine. So you're right. We'll talk about that more next week. Well, you'll read about it on PhillyFanatics.com. Gordon's going to have his Eagles draft preview coming up later this week. And like I said, by next Sunday, I think we should have a mock draft for the entire first round. So that's it for this week's show. Ash Landsberg, I am Eric Fisher. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.